Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
We are excited to have Bob Donovan on, who is actually a dear friend of ours. He has a huge hand in the marriage ministries over at Black Rock Church in Fairfield. Bob, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Melissa. Nice to talk to you.
I know. Good to talk to you, too. Sorry, we were having some phone issues here, which is my fault. I definitely copied your number down wrong, so that's my issue. But we're glad to have you this morning. So let's talk a little bit about that recent article that showed Connecticut had one of the lowest marriage rates in the country. First of all, any idea why that is?
Well, I think you have to look at it in a kind of layers. I mean, first of all, without getting to the Connecticut-specific aspect of it, just in general, marriage rates are down across the country. So let's look at that first, and then I'll talk about Connecticut second. I think clearly it's these young couples that are considering marriage. They're afraid of jumping into something that is what they've experienced is painful. I mean, most of them come out of divorced homes, broken homes. I mean, we run a class on preparing for marriage, and probably 30-40% of couples say that. They come out of broken homes, and they saw, you know, a lot of hurt, a lot of woundedness, and they don't repeat that. So I think there's a fear of repeating the past. I also think they don't, you know, when they don't do their homework, when they don't look into the value of marriage. And it's really funny because when you look at the, any article you do, I mean, Time Magazine had a great piece recently about the social economic benefits of marriage. There's so many benefits to marriage. They're not looking at that. I think also just, the other thing is just couples are kind of, I'll just call it sliding into cohabitation. And I say sliding because they think that that's the next step in their relationship, not marriage, but cohabitation. And it's easier. It's more convenient. I said sliding versus like deciding what to do. So I think it's more convenient.
When you say sliding, you mean like you're just assuming like, hey, I graduated college. I've been dating the same guy. So I guess we're supposed to move in together next. You mean like that?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I say, okay, slide versus decide, right? They don't assess should we get married? Should we live together? They don't. They said the next step would be to let's just cohabitate.
But things have kind of, the mindset has kind of changed too, because you take my mother, for example. My mother at age 24 already had two children. They already owned a home. And my father was doing the bulk of the money making. My mother took care of the house, and that's just the way that it is. Is fear a big part of it too? Because I know when I first got married, the first thing that was in my mind was, oh my God, I've got to do this now. Every month, I've got to come up with this amount. Every month, I've got to do this. I've got to make sure that this is rolling. Is that part of it too?
Well, yeah, you know, Tony, you're opening up kind of another layer of this, which is kind of the millennial generation and their expectations. And without getting too deep into that, you know, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. There is a concern about responsibility and you know, what that comes with marriage and parenting. I mean, people are getting married 28, 30 years old now. They're delaying having children later. So absolutely, there's this fear of responsibility and what that brings. Couples are living home together longer. So, again, this is a very layered discussion that you have to look at, I think in different ways. The other thing, which is interesting, I did think about this: why Connecticut? You know, why is Connecticut so low on this spectrum? And I'll tell you a hypothesis I have, and that's I'll tie it right into their Christian faith. When you look at the least, according to Pew Research and Barna and other significant research agencies, Connecticut ranks 47th in the country as least church state. Least church state basically means people that don't believe in God, people don't pray daily, people don't regularly go to church. We rank almost lowest in the state in that area, right? And we rank almost last in the state on couples getting married.
Wow.
I think there's a correlation to that. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Bob. I mean, I do think it's interesting, even when I talk to my friends who have either been dating a long time or who have been even married and they're even delaying having children. They don't know if they ever want to have children. You know, I do think sometimes there are upper generations, like I know my parents' generation certainly will say, you know, I think your generation's more selfish. And I don't know if it's about being selfish or you're more focused on your career. If more than ever, it's that you're lacking something in your relationship. You know, like I said, I look at people who are very happy, have been dating for a long time. And at the surface, they look like sometimes they're even happier than my husband and I are. But I find that, you know, the thing that really, I mean, look, I married someone who never wanted to get married. Derek was very much, I want to have kids. I want to stay with you, but I don't trust the marriage thing, broken home. So, you know, we went through that. And it wasn't until God was at the center of our relationship that we were ever going to move forward and get married. It was not in the cards for us. And we had been together 7 years at that point.
Yeah, it's again, it's a layered conversation. I'll just call that. I think our generation now is looking at, I'll just say, the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is just so significant. You're looking at somebody to make them happy, and if that's when that's at the center of your relationship, I mean, that's just not going to last. Versus when you get into a kind of a Christian marriage, it's just a deeper, more meaningful decision you're making and lifestyle that you're making. So, you know, without getting too into that, I do think there's a correlation into that as well. I think there's some superficiality regarding what people are looking at in relationships versus the depth of marriage. I mean, if people really looked at the value of marriage, Google it. Any study shows people are healthier, more educated. There's more health benefits. I mean, that's why, like, what are couples thinking?
Right.
They're not.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Bob, does it come down to something as simple as here in Connecticut? Does it come down to something as simple as finances? I mean, Connecticut, one of the most expensive places in the country live. And I know, you know, my son, he's a bright kid. He can't make any money. He graduated top of his class, and he just can't make any money.
Yeah, so I think that's really spot on, Tony, that we are definitely in one of the more richest, more financially demanding parts of the country. However, you do your homework and you do look at the data, right? There is an economic benefit to marriage, okay? There really is. I mean, just again, when you look at the studies, there's an economic, there's a social, there's a health, mental, physical benefit to marriage. So I think there's more pressure on couples because where we live. But you see what I'm saying? That they're not looking at, they're pursuing myths and not facts. They really are.
And we're back to this very interesting conversation with Bob Donovan, who's in charge of marriage ministries over at Black Rock Church in Fairfield. And Bob, we were talking about how Connecticut has one of the lowest marriage rates in the country, a new study that came out last week. And actually, just while we were off the mic, I was saying to Tony, what I guess saddens me about marriage at this point, or what saddens me about this study, is that even if finances are in the way and that there's a pressure, I get that. Look, we went into our marriage in debt. Unfortunately, you know, we had some family issues where somebody took out credit cards under my husband's name, and we were thousands of dollars in debt going into our marriage. And, you know, the financial struggles are there. They're there even today. But I find that marriage is more of a struggle than it used to be. Like, I thought marriage, growing up, marriage was like this huge privilege, this huge exciting thing. And even though you had to work at it, you know, it was something that I felt was valued more. But now I find marriage is kind of like, oh, if I have to get married, I will. You know, people are having kids without getting married. People are just living together for 50 plus years and they never get married. I think it's just, I feel like marriage is viewed completely differently than it used to be decades ago. Maybe I'm wrong, but it kind of saddens me. And I think maybe that has to do a little bit with why it's such a low rate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're hitting on something because not only people look at it differently. I think so. You got to get at the core of that, right? You got to get behind that comment, that statement, which is true. That's a true statement. I think when you look at, again, I don't want to pick on this generation, but when you look at folks in their couples in their 25, 35, again, it is a more self-centered culture right now.
Yeah.
Again, that's not a knock. It's not a knock. It is a little bit more self-centered organization, culture right now. So, you know, working longer, staying single longer. Again, I call it the pursuit of happiness. You know, I found something recently that's blew me away, that Yale University, 317 years old, by far the most popular course right now at Yale University is a course that's called the pursuit of happiness. It's about how to live a happy life. A third of their undergraduate class overwhelmed their faculty with the demand for this class. Why? Because that's what they're looking for. It's a very different culture right now versus when we were younger, Tony, you and I, right? It was just different. It was something bigger than yourself. You know, like, I'm not putting myself at the center, whereas I think today there is a little bit more of that. And again, look, I don't want to bash this culture. These young folks are way more driven, way more. My sons-in-law are way better, more dads than I am. I mean, there's a lot of great things about this generation coming up.
All right, Bob. Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, I'll do some bashing. It seems to be. No, but this also happened when I was doing the dating thing. And I'm going to articulate this probably the wrong way. And, you know, I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable, but that there are a lot of wackos out there as well. You know what I'm saying? You hook up with somebody and you think this might be the one. And then all of a sudden you back up and you say, whoa, wait a minute. What am I getting myself into? I don't know. Right. Am I wrong there? No.
Well, let me tease that out a little bit, right? Because you said something really significant that, you know, you're right. That when you're dating, right, you're thinking, is this the one, right?
Right.
That's what you think about. And I would contend. I've done a lot of work. I've done this for 15 years, over 200 couples. So I do know what I'm talking about with this one, that young couples are way too focused on that, way too focused on, is this the right person? Is this my soulmate? Is he or she the one? Versus, am I the one?
Right.
Versus, am I the best person I need to be?
Right.
Am I the best person that the person who I'm looking for can be looking for? You see, that's a big shift right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said about when you find the right one, you're going to know it. It's the minute that you stop looking, that's when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're focused on finding the right one when you're dating, Tony, you're blinded.
Mm.
You're blinded.
Yeah.
Let me just throw something into this right now. The whole aspect of casual sex right now. Casual sex is way more prevalent now than it was back then. When you are having a physical relationship, I'll say you're binded and blinded. So you cannot see the faults about your future spouse than you need to.
But
it really is. That's
so
why
true.
When you're having a physical relationship, that's all you think about. And you're not assessing properly the health of your relationship. So that's yet another layer as to what complicates this factor of marriage.
Yeah, and we're all on our best behavior in the first 6 months
exactly.
to a year. Yeah, you're right.
It's true. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. We're running out of time.
I know. Bob, you're amazing. If anybody wants to ask you any questions or contact you with their church, is there anywhere they can go to get those resources?
Yep. Easy. Just go to Black Rock Church website, and I'm in there, bdonovan@blackrock.org. We're happy to correspond with anybody.
All right. Mr. Donovan, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. We'll talk to you again. Very interesting subject. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
All right, good morning. It's Tony and Melissa. We've got 30 degrees, and with us here on the telephone line is Milford Police Officer Mike DeVito. And Mike, I thank you so much for taking a few moments. I had a quick question for you. Maybe you could clear it up for me. First of all, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
We're doing okay. Like I told you on the phone, I live in Stamford. I live in a condo. There's about 16 condos in our little thing here. And recently, a young couple has moved in right next door to me. They can't be any more than 25 or 30 years old. And it seems that Saturday night is party night. And the noise has just escalated to a point where we can't stand it anymore. And I wouldn't mind it so much if they would cut it off, say, at 10, 11 o'clock at night. But they're partying until 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. And when I say partying, the noise, the people, there had to be, to me, it sounded like there were 100 people in there. And they must be playing drinking games because they're making noises like, oh, 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 oh. I mean, in the middle of the night. I mean, what is my right as a neighbor? What do I do?
All right. Let me preface it by saying, this comes from experience, both working and personally. My kids live out of state in situations similar to yours. I always tell people, and I'm being contrite, but having a bad neighbor is way worse than having a bad spouse. It really is. Because you can remedy the latter. You know, it takes a little time, and there's some hurt feelings. But the former, they're really, really difficult, because if you push too hard, then there's, you know, repercussions. But I understand you do need to get peace and quiet, and there are limits. You're not talking about 10 o'clock at night on a weekend making a complaint. 5 in the morning is kind of late, obviously, and the noise it gets exasperated when there's, you know, more people in and that late at night. You do have to say something. My best suggestion always is to talk to them and not at 5 in the morning, so that when you see them in passing at, you know, 10, 11 on a Saturday or 5, 6 o'clock on a week, that you can just mention that, you know, just run it by them. And when they're completely sober and understanding, hopefully, and just mention that you will have to, the next time, if it occurs again, you're going to have to either A, call the landlord, or B, maybe even contact the police, which we do come out in those instances, and we usually give them a warning, you know, the first time.
So you wouldn't contact the police just yet if this happens again?
I would. I mean, it's because then you know what happens. Then they accidentally bang the you know, vacuum or drop their gym bag. You know what, you those little things to annoy you where you're not really going to call. I would suggest try and speak to them first.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know that's what happened. So my daughter was on the end of the other end. She was the one that was, you know, just fresh out of college down in Washington, D.C., and they had a lot of parties. And they finally spoke to them. And I said to her, I said, well, who are the other people? She said, well, they're a young couple with a young child. I said, well, what do you think? I said, you have to back off on that. You have to understand it from the other. You have to look at it from their point.
Mm-hmm. But calling the police just yet is not the thing to do. And like I said, I was going to get up, put my pants on, and go down there and ring the doorbell at 5 o'clock in the morning. But my wife said that that's not a good idea. And she said exactly what you said. They probably had too much to drink. You never know. You might
you
take a punch in the mouth.
Yeah.
You never know, you know. What would you think about saying, you know, like at 5 o'clock in the evening, just going over there and knocking on the door? Like say this afternoon when things are calm and just talking about it.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I suggest you do. I agree with your wife. 5 a.m. yesterday morning or Sunday morning was not the best time. You can just tell, you know, just say, looking at it from your point, say, listen, I understand you guys are having fun and whatnot, but you know, 11, 12 o'clock is fine, but 5 a.m. is way too late. You know, I live here. I have the right to have a little bit of peace and quiet to get my sleep on Sunday morning. Can't have this going forward. And if it continues, you know, I'll probably call the police or at least our, you know, something to do, maybe someone with your building, and you'll push forward from there. But you
all
can
right.
try speaking to them. But again, 5 p.m., 6 p.m. on a weeknight's a much better time to interact with them than it would have been at 5 a.m.
Officer DeVito, I have to imagine every town and city have different ordinances in place, but is it typically around that 10, 11 o'clock time that things shut down? Only because I remember living in Fairfield with my parents, and whenever we had family parties, the rule there was at 10 o'clock you shut down outdoor music, unless you can kind of keep it quiet out by the bonfire or something. You kind of took the party inside if you were in a home. Totally different, I would think, if you're in a condo complex just because you share walls. But are there basically ordinances, noise ordinances in every single city in town here in Connecticut that kind of apply to that 10, 11 o'clock time zone to, hey, you should probably kind of cool it a little bit, just kind of take it down?
Some towns and cities actually have ordinances, and the ones that don't, and Milford's a city that doesn't have a clear one, we just use what is reasonable. So we actually, you know, believe it or not, we get a lot of our complaints are work-related complaints. So 6, 7 o'clock in the morning on Saturday and Sunday, power tools and whatnot. So it's really, you know, what is reasonable. So we kind of have them maybe if they start at like 7 a.m., and they do have to work all day and they're cutting down trees or, you know, clearing lots and whatnot. So we go with what is reasonable. And certainly playing loud music at 1:30 in the morning is not reasonable by anybody's standards.
Well, this is news to me, Tony, because so we moved to Milford over a year ago. And last summer we discovered that we have in our backyard a family, that very nice family, because I met the neighbors. I'm one of those people that goes around and meets the neighbors because I'm obnoxious. But our neighbor behind us has two college kids who came home last summer. And every Friday and Saturday night, the music was booming till about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And we do have a toddler. He was one at the time. And I remember my husband being like, there's got to be an ordinance in place or something to shut this down. He just went over and was like, listen, our son can't sleep. We can hear the music. They were very nice about it. But there is no ordinance in place in Milford. Not that this comes back to me, but what?
But that's still fine, because the reasonableness would apply. And I hope to God my son wasn't over at one of those parties, because we don't live far from you. But nonetheless, no, we would apply what's reasonable. And that certainly is not, because we would say to them, listen, there's young kids in the neighborhood. They can't sleep at 1 o'clock morning with the music this loud. So we would just shut it off. That would be their warning. If we had to come back, there would be further enforcement. So they get the first warning, pull the plug, shut it down, and we just move on from there.
Officer DeVito, very helpful this morning. Thank you so very, very much, and hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon.
Hey, good luck in that talk. Remember, 5 o'clock in the afternoon is the best time. Right?
All right. Thank you, my friend.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Tony and Melissa in the morning right now on WICC 600.
Senator, I'm so sorry that we made you wait so long. How you doing?
I am wonderful, Tony. And again, happy birthday a week later.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate that. All right. Tony Wong is here. Senator, the governor addressed the state last week about coronavirus. Let's talk about the current state action for the airborne virus. Is there any information or any guidance that you could give our listeners?
Well, the encouraging news is the fact that state political and medical leaders have been preparing for the eventual arrival of this virus for the past few weeks, and it is going to be eventual. And the important update from Governor Lamont's office last Friday was the fact that our state public health laboratory has now been approved to test for the coronavirus by the Federal Center for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration. What that means is the fact that if anybody is suspected of having symptoms and possibly having the illness, that we could get a 24-hour turnaround to test the individual to make sure that they are or are not infected with the virus, and that we are able to respond and contain it much more effectively. One of the biggest challenges is the fact that the time lag allows a greater possibility of greater infection. So our ability to be able to test quickly is a huge plus to be able to help us manage for the eventual arrival in our state. But the far more important thing is to be able to balance this. You know, Dr. Michael Ivey, who's the deputy chief medical director, medical officer for Yale New Haven, says, in essence, you know, about 80% of the people who get the virus don't get very sick. It will actually be a relatively mild illness. But at the same time, it's going to be quarantined and with incredible caution and care. We're going to take nothing for granted because, you know, with a mortality rate between 1 and 2%, it needs to be taken very, very seriously. But it's important for people to understand that it is symptomatic to what a severe flu would be, and that with the proper care, with the proper quarantine, it can be managed. And that's really important for us to share that with people, because we need to manage and balance kind of the emotional frenzy that Melissa mentioned earlier with real information, with better hygiene and health practices, and really to get the professional medical support and a huge bundle of caution. Because, you know, here's what I just heard. The flu has killed over 10,000 people in the United States during this flu season from September up to May 2020. Mm-hmm. That's the flu season. But when you put that into context, you know, the insidious flu is potentially equally as dangerous.
I would almost argue, Senator Wong, that I think it's worse, to be honest. So honestly, the coronavirus hasn't gotten here into Connecticut, at least yet. But what you just said, I thought, was profound, because you just mentioned that according to the doctor who was kind of releasing a lot of this information, and even what we've heard from the CDC, a lot of what happened in mainland China, you know, obviously got out of hand. But I think it also kind of went, I don't want to say underreported, but I do think it wasn't really managed until it almost got to be too late. I feel that the U.S. was very proactive in, hey, this is happening overseas. We've got to be aware of it. It's probably going to come our way. It has come our way. But the flu, you know, just looking at Connecticut alone, we have had dozens of deaths, including one pediatric this year, or this season, I should say. And we haven't even seen the coronavirus yet in Connecticut. We probably will. There's no question it's probably on its way here any day now. But in the meantime, I do find that the flu kind of has gotten almost pushed back a little bit. Like, hey, that used to be a threat, but not anymore. That's not true. I find the flu has been a more immediate threat to us than the coronavirus has, if I'm being honest.
Well, I think, as Dr. Ivey, who I respect greatly, it putting it into context is really important, and I want to applaud our state leaders and our medical leaders, but also the CDC for really raising awareness about this and managing the process and move away from the frenzy. You've heard incidences where there's bickering back and forth. Ultimately, I think everyone is on the same course, that we want to be sure that everyone is protected, everyone is informed. And I'm really pleased that we're going to be able to test and get quicker turnaround, but also to be able to share with people that there are tremendous resources out there and that they need to be cautious. I think listening to you just minutes before, describing the personal hygienes, the precautions, and really understanding that if you're not feeling well, be cautious, take an ounce of prevention, and don't expose yourself to other people. It really is a bundle of caution. And bottom line, we need to manage the process. But there is a frenzy. There is no denying it. I went to 3 stores this weekend, and they all ran out of Purell. It's remarkable.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure. Senator Tony Wong, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for talking to us, and we will talk to you again next week.
Always. Thank you.